Hey everybody, I'm an addict named Barry. And man, I'm tired. We drove up from Florida yesterday. And aside from that, I'm on the new Hep C treatment, and one of the side effects is fatigue. So between the two things, man, I'm tired. So if I say anything stupid, just blame it on being tired. But it's a great topic, fourth step, fourth tradition. And I'll start out with the fourth tradition. The fourth tradition to me means responsibility. You know, that our groups are responsible. It offers freedom to do a lot, but we need to be responsible because what we do could affect NA as a whole. And I go back in my thinking, like I started my recovery process a long time ago. I haven't been clean. I was clean from 85 to 97 and used after a terrible divorce and neck surgery. Never stopped coming to meetings, but it took me 2 years to get clean again. So my clean date is 99, but I've been doing this a long time. And I was involved in Narcotics Anonymous in the mid-80s when Narcotics Anonymous was struggling for an identity. When people were not attending NA strictly. When people were identifying as other than addicts, bringing in literature that wasn't about NA, bringing in speakers to our meetings that weren't NA speakers. And we went through a lot of turmoil and a lot of struggle to help develop this fellowship into what it is today with the clarity of our message. And I'm proud to be a part of that, but yet, on the other hand, we used it to drive a lot of people away. You know, we didn't have the grace or the skills to help people in the kind of way. We didn't have the love because we weren't experienced enough in Narcotics Anonymous traditions to be able to do it in a loving and caring way. We didn't care, or we didn't know better. And I can remember being in a meeting. We started a meeting on Thursday nights in Maple Shade, New Jersey, and it was a closed meeting for addicts only. And one night there was a woman there with a young kid, and she identified herself as the boy's mother, and we asked her to leave. The kid was 16, just out of treatment one day, and we were so rigid having it be a closed NA meeting, we asked her to leave. Well, they both left. And it just didn't sit right in my spirit. And we started meetings. You know, I said, you know what, there's got to be a better way, a more loving way, a God-centered way. And autonomy allows that. You know, autonomy allows that meeting to go on as a closed meeting and ask whoever wants to leave if they don't identify themselves as an addict. But the loving God came into my life and in the spirit of a few others, and we started some other meetings in South Jersey that are still going on today and are the most successful meetings in South Jersey. And we are responsible, that our groups are responsible to carry this message. And you know, and the message is a God-given gift of life. It's, you know, we save lives here. That's our business. You know, like, if we were to make a business plan, it would be, we save lives. We offer hope. We offer freedom. We offer grace. That's what we do here. And it's pretty self-explanatory. Like, you know, we use NA literature. You know, we can use the Living Clean book. We can use the Works How and Why. We can use our basic texts. We can use our IPs. We can use whatever NA literature we want, but it better be NA literature, because if not, we're affecting NA as a whole. You know, our speakers better be NA speakers. We have enough of them. Like, when I first got clean in 1985, there were very few people around that were committed strictly to this fellowship. And I remember my aftercare counselor in treatment said, "Hey, Barr, you know, you're 36 years old, you're what we call chronic and habitual, and your chances of recovery are basically slim and none." And she suggested I go to 4 AA meetings a week and 3 NA meetings a week, and that I get a sponsor with at least 10 years clean. well, you know what? I came to NA and I didn't know anybody. There wasn't anybody in my area with 10 years clean. That today is done. You know, like, oh, you know what? My friend Noelle was here. We want to give her a shout out. She just celebrated 40 years clean. And Sharon next to us got 36, and Danny's got 38. And between the three of them, let me see, 100 years, right on the front corner. So we have the long-term recovery in Narcotics Anonymous today. You know what I mean? We don't have to go somewhere else to seek what we think is long-term or better. It's here. But to get to the fourth step, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't think I had a problem other than a drug problem. You know, I didn't really see any need for the steps. You know what I mean? I remember when I was in treatment, I said, well, first step, yeah, I might be powerless, might be. You know, I'm not going to swear to it. My life is definitely unmanageable. Insanity, nah. I've only been in a nut house once, so how bad could I really be? And that's because it was in the 60s and they really didn't know what to do with us other than that. You know, that was treatment back then. They put you in a gown, put you in a closed ward and give you Thorazine. You know, and let you shuffle around the ward and talk shit. You know? That's what they did. But the third step, you know, I didn't know anything about it. The only decision I ever made in my life was, let's go get another one. You know, and then when that ran out, let's go get another one. And then where can I get another one? And where am I going to get the money for another one? And how am I going to get another one? And am I going to go to jail today? Well, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? That's where it takes us. And so, you know, and then I looked at the fourth step and, you know, a searching and fearless moral inventory. I'll take yours. You know, it took me a few years to see of ourselves. You know, I thought I could take everybody else's. And, you know, little by little I came. I just showed up. You know, I showed up because I really had nothing else going on. I showed up. I didn't really know if I wanted what you guys had to offer, but I knew I no longer wanted what I had to offer. You know, and I became willing to try something different. You know, and I wasn't convinced that this was it. You know, I just knew that I had been here in 83 and I thought, God, is this what my life has become? A church basement on a Sunday night? You know, I don't think so. You know, there's better than this and better to this. Better to me than this was using. You know, and I used for a couple more years until every time I used, if I wasn't this close to death, I didn't think I was using right. And I came to a point where for the first time in my life I felt like I was going to die. And I called and went back into treatment and took a whole nother look at the steps. And when they talked about powerless, I understood that I was using against my will. I didn't want to use. I just didn't know how not to. I didn't know that we could. See, I'm going to be 66 years old in a few months, man. I grew up in the 60s. I never saw anybody get clean. Ever, ever, ever. I saw my buddies go to Lexington, Kentucky to the drug farm. Look, I see people shaking their head. You can relate, right? I saw them go to Second Genesis and Daytop Village, and I saw them get their heads shaved, and I saw them, and I heard stories that they were cleaning toilets with toothbrushes, and that they were being torn down to be built up, and after a while, they earn the privilege to drink alcohol. Man, I'm wound from that coffee. I never drink coffee, but I'm so tired. I said, let me get a coffee, and they were out of decaf. And when I do drink coffee, I drink one cup a day, and it's decaf. But so I never knew that recovery was possible because nobody ever proved it to me. I was one of those guys, you had to show me that recovery was possible, and I never saw it. It just wasn't happening. And until I came here. I remember I came here, and in 30 days clean, I went to a meeting, and a dude was celebrating 2 years, and he was talking about all the time he had done in Trenton State Prison. And I said, damn, man, if he could stay clean, I know I can. he was a lot worse than me. And that's the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. That's the identification. It's empathy. It's crucial. That identification is crucial. In 1971, when I was in the Maryland Penitentiary, they brought in meetings. They sent me to Hagerstown, and they brought in meetings from AA, and I never heard people talking about doing stick-ups for a shot of liquor. You know, or I didn't hear about people breaking into houses for a 12-pack. You know what I mean? And I never heard people talking about the lives that me and my crew had acquired over the years. So I never, you know, I looked at that as a joke. And when I came to NA, it was like, man, I'm home. I'm home. You know, I felt you guys. For the first time in my life, I felt the way you felt. I could tell by your stories, like, people who are not addicts don't talk our language. You know, my father didn't sit at the dinner table and talk about how many milligrams he was on. You know, my father didn't sit at the table and talk about how many grams are in an 8-ball. You know, he talked about his day at work. And there might be some people in here whose fathers did do that. You know, but I love being around other addicts. Always have. Always will. When I was using, there was nobody I'd rather be around than a using addict. Till you started taking my shit. And in recovery, there's nobody I'd rather be around than a clean addict. So it took a while for me to get into this process to understand what was really happening here. You know, I wasn't interested in the spirituality of this program. I was just interested in not going to jail. You know, I was interested in not losing anything that I never had. You know, we always talk about what's worse in addiction, losing what you had or never having anything to lose. And between those two things, it was pretty much everything in life. You know, I was a mean, arrogant person. I was hateful, I was deceitful, I was a liar, I was a thief, and I was no good. And loved it, I thought. Till I was shown a better way. And so I came to Narcotics Anonymous and I surrendered. I said, you know what? What do I really have to lose by giving this a chance? You know? And the first step for me today is I look myself in the mirror, and this is direction of my sponsor, who passed away a couple years ago. He's my sponsor for like over 20 years. And he said, Barr, I want you to look yourself dead in the eye and ask yourself, what has changed since yesterday as far as being an addict? Am I still powerless over my addiction? Is my life still unmanageable? Yes. Okay. First step. Acceptance of my dilemma. I have a problem. Step two offers a solution. This is the only place I've ever been to that not only correctly identifies the problem, but correctly offers the solution that fits the problem. I mean, I went to psychologists, psychiatrists, parole officers, probation officers, the whole nine, the same shit we all did. And everybody thought they could fix me. The problem was they didn't know what the problem was. So how are they going to fix the problem until they identify it correctly? So, once I did the first step, the second step, yeah, I am insane. When I look back at some of the shit that I did, with this much honesty, I had to admit that I was insane. And step two offers restoration. It says, could be restored to sanity. Am I willing? Fuck yeah. You know, once I got a taste, I'm just like every other good addict. Once I got a taste, I wasn't satisfied with a cotton shot. You know, I wanted more of what this program had to offer. So I started chasing recovery, the way we all do, the way Mary talked about. She wanted it, I want it, we all want it, that's why we're here tonight. The most important possession I have, my recovery, my membership to Narcotics Anonymous. most precious membership. Because I've had it. I used the 12 and a half years clean. Got 15 now. You know what I mean? I gave it up once. I ain't giving it up again. Not today. You know, not today. So, I came to believe that the restoration process was possible for me. If it was possible for you, it could work for me. So, what do I do now? Step three, I commit. I commit. I make a commitment. Step three, we made a decision. To do what? To go further with the steps. To turn my will and my life over to the care of a power that's the end-all, be-all. My higher power isn't a doorknob. Just want to get that out of the way. You know, it's much more loving, much more caring, much more powerful, much more graceful, merciful, loving, and, you know. And it's the divine power that keeps this whole thing moving. You know, it's shit. You know, so I have this higher power that loves me, cares for me, and wants only the best for me. So why would I not commit? So in step three, I make a decision. Hey, Barrett, wake up, smell the coffee, get with the program, make that decision. So on a daily basis, I say, hey, God, I'm making a commitment to you. I'm making a commitment to NA. And I'm making a commitment to myself that no matter what comes down the pipe today, I just refuse to use, man. I refuse. And, no, and you know, it's one of those no matter what deals. No matter what. So then, to take the third step further, it's saying, I commit to the NA way of life. The NA way of life is the steps, the traditions. In the first three steps, I develop a little bit of courage, spiritual courage. I develop some honesty. I develop some open-mindedness. I develop some willingness. Why? Because I'm gaining rewards. Like, this program is written so perfectly. How do you get an egotistical, self-centered mismanager to do this work and do something for somebody else? Give him a cotton shot. And tell him, you know, that there's more on the other end. You know, it's like you throw out the fishing rod and we get reeled in. Gently, gently. Through the progression, the spiritual progression of the steps. And by the time we get to the 12th step, the spiritual transformation has taken place. The awakening has happened, and it's like, God damn, life is good, man. Life is awesome. And I want more of it. It's all about more. My name should have been Mo. Because it's all about Mo. You know? Give me this much, I want this much. And it's written perfectly for us. It's designed, I mean, It's just a beautiful program. But anyway, so by the time I got to the fourth step, I had some spiritual courage. I had a belief in a power greater than myself. I had a willingness to want to get better. And I had to look inside. For me, the fourth step was, hey, Barry. Meet Barry. You know? And we talk about, like, in the fifth step where it says, we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. I already knew what I had done. God knew what I had done. I just needed to put it on paper so that I could own what's mine. So that I could disown what isn't mine that I thought was mine all my life. It's the inventory process is a process of discovery. It's who I really am, the start. It's what gives me the basis of the list for my defects. How are you going to do step 6, 7, 8, and 9 without knowing who and what I am? without knowing how defective I really am, what my exact nature of my wrongs are. How am I going to make amends if I never write an inventory that's going to give me the list? The fourth step might be, other than the first step, the biggest one, because it opens the door to the internal process. You know, like, you know, with steps 1, 2, and 3, you can pretty much do them with lip service. You know, and I'm going back before it works how and why, before step writing guide. You know, when I first came in 85 or even in 83, there wasn't all of these books like that. You know, in the first 4 steps I did, my sponsor had me write it like an autobiography. You know what I mean? Write my story. You know, so I wouldn't, you know, it was a write to impress kind of thing. You know what I mean? If I did 2 bags, I told him I did 4. You know? If I stole $8, I told him it was $2,000. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't in the process enough and didn't know enough. And over the process of the evolution of my recovery, as I got more honest, my inventories got better, more honest. I've done 6 4-steps. And I keep them. And anybody that I get that I sponsor, I show them 6. I said, you want to know what I did? You want what I have? I'm going to show you what I did to get it. You know, and I'm not going to beat them over the head with it, and I'm not going to tell them that they're not writing the right stuff, because we're all where we're supposed to be. We're all where we are. I remember in 1987 coming home from Philly, I had written this I had the sponsor. And I wrote the first step for him, and it was off of his first step, like sponsorship family guide. And he said, "Oh, Barry, you totally missed the boat. Go home and write it again." And I lived in Jersey. He was in Northeast Philly. And I felt like throwing a goddamn thing out a window and saying, "F you," and quitting NA. You know? But I wanted to get better. You know? And now, and little things come along in our personal recovery that you know, mean a lot to us, and you know, and that meant a lot to me. And I said, you know what, I'll never do that to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, if that is the case, I'll take the time to try to explain, you know, we're not talking about the external of the step. We're talking about the insides. This is an inside job. These steps take us on a spiritual transformation of total self-centeredness towards God-centeredness. You know, it's not about the nice car, the nice house. And I mean, and I thought it was when I got here, just like a lot of other people. I thought, to me, the biggest winner in the meeting was the guy with the fattest gold chain. You know, or the nicest car in the parking lot, or the chick that had the prettiest ass. You know, I thought they were the winners. You know, and some of them turned out to be, and some of them turned out not to be, you know. That was a crapshoot. But, you know, here, years later, I know who the winners are. You know, the winners are the people that get up on Sunday morning and go do an H&I commitment. You know, at 25 years clean. Not saying, you know what, I did mine. Let somebody else do it. But the fourth step, getting back to the fourth step, it's a turning point. Because, you know, when I did the first 3 steps, it was, you know, I wrote a little something, something. But the fourth step made me look at myself. And I looked at myself and I said, you know what? This isn't who and what I want to be. You know? And it led to the willingness to write my defects of character, to write what my life would be like without these defects of character, and to pray for the willingness to have them removed. And it gave me the willingness to write a list of all the people that I had harmed and become willing to make those amends. And it gave me the willingness to swallow my pride, to let my ego go and say, you know what? I was wrong and I'm sorry. And it gave me the willingness to mend my ways, to change. This program is all about change. You know, I don't want to be a slimy guy. You know, I don't want to be a dirt ball. I don't want to be, you know, NA predator. I don't want to be a thief. I don't want to be a liar. I want to be a stand-up guy. You know, I want to be about something. And my sponsor, before he passed away, He told me when I do my 10-step inventory at night, what he stressed to me is I look myself in the mirror again when I'm brushing my teeth at night and I ask myself one question. Hey, Barry, what are you really about? And that tells the story. It's not what I tell myself I'm about. It's not what I think I'm about. It's not what you think I'm about. It's look at my actions. Actions speak louder than words. And not the time?
Got 1 minute.
Anyway, I'm glad I came. It was a great trip, man. These guys from Florida who drove up with me, I appreciate their friendship. I dove right in. I did like a 180 and 180 in Florida just to dig myself in and get acquainted with the fellowship, you know, and try to show them how we do it right up here. And, you know, and how superior East Coast, we do rock. You know, I've been to a lot of meetings in a lot of places. And from Baltimore, you know, or D.C. or Virginia, up to Massachusetts, best N.A. in the world now. It's crystal clear. And it makes me think that all the effort that we put into getting it crystal clear paid off. You know, we're glad to be here. We're glad to be members of Narcotics Anonymous. Glad to be at the CMP. And I love you guys, and I hope we see you all in Southwest Florida. If you're coming, take my phone number. I'll pick you up at the airport and take you to a meeting. Thanks.